You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify. It's only a kick. A jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
What's up, football fans that might be watching or listening? Just a quick reminder, a call to action for everyone that is listening to this podcast. If you're listening, wherever you listen, give us a five-star rating. We do appreciate it. If you're watching live on YouTube, hit that subscribe button, like it, follow the channel so that you get all the latest NFL news and notes right here at Fans First Sports Network. I'm Jeff Hartman for this NFL Whip Around, joined as always by Coach KT Smith. What's up, Coach? How are you?
What's up, Jeff? Always some football to talk about, so I'm ready to go.
Absolutely. We're going to be talking about the combine. We're going to be talking about just the overall draft prospects and free agency stuff as well. We have a lot of topics to cover, I should say, on the NFL Whip Around today. Let's get right into it with the NFL Combine. It starts this week. You said it starts Thursday, right? Isn't that the first day?
Thursday is the first day.
Okay. Thursday is when the Underwear Olympics begin. And so I want to ask you as a coach, because I have my own viewpoints of it, how do you view the combine? Is it must watch television, or what is it for you? I guess finish the sentence.
Yeah, I think I have two different perspectives. I think the one perspective is just as a fan, if you really love football and if you're entering that dead month of March where there's no real football going on, and if you're jonesing for a little football fix, it's a great opportunity for you to just tune in and see some freakishly athletic large men. I mean, my gosh, when you watch like the defensive linemen at 340 pounds run 5'0" in the 40. That's mind boggling, man. Or you watch the linebackers go through those drills and you look at how fast they're moving at that size and speed. It's really just super impressive stuff. I like that part of it, just being a fan and marveling at these guys. And then obviously as a coach, I really like to look at the drills and break them down and what are they trying to get out of them? And what are they judging here? So for me, yes, it's a really interesting and valuable thing.
Do you really think it translates? Because I'm going to be honest. I was on Twitter today, and I'm scrolling through, and the Steelers official X Twitter account put out a video of TJ Watt back when he was at the Combine doing the, I don't even know what you would call it, the T drill, where you start, you run up, you have to kind of bend around, hit the cone, go to the other side, and then bend as you finish. So you do like a T. I'm not sure if that's the actual terminology. My apologies if it isn't. He looks slow as hell going through those drills. Maybe it was because he was younger, but now when you watch him on the field, like, he looks so much faster when he actually has an opponent in front of him. So that makes me wonder. I see that. I'm thinking, does this actually translate to the field? What's your take on that?
It probably doesn't translate, but it may influence the way people think, because TJ Watt lasted until the 30th pick. Yeah. So, hey, who knows? If he had killed those drills, maybe he would have gone in the top 10. If they were redrafting, he would certainly go in the top five probably of that draft. But does it translate? I think there are certain things that you're looking for that go beyond the time. Like the 40-yard dash doesn't necessarily translate, because how often are you running an actual 40 in an NFL game? But the first 10 yards, man, they look a lot at that. They really look at that. That quick burst. How quick do you get out of the block, so to speak? They look at the change of direction stuff. I know that, like, for example, the three cone drill or the Olympic shuttle, those drills are valued a lot more than the 40-yard dash, because they mimic what's happening on a football field a lot more. So I think there are some drills that translate more than others.
I always want to know what people have to do to get a drill named after them that is now used in the combine every year. Defensive coordinator for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Terrell Austin, he has a drill named after him. So does running back Deuce Staley, the Deuce Staley drill. How do these people get these drills? I don't know.
I was unaware that there was a Deuce Staley drill. I didn't know.
Yeah.
That.
I don't even know what it is, but there is a drill. You hear Rich Eisen every year on the NFL Network saying, getting ready for the Deuce Staley drill. Like, the Deuce Staley, what did he do to get that drill named after him? I don't know. But okay, let's talk about the workout warriors, as I call them. These are the people that show up, and they might be, like you had mentioned earlier, unbelievably athletic. Whether it's the broad jump, 40-yard dash, doesn't matter. I always, as a former personal trainer, I look at the bench press numbers and just say, this is insane. They put 225 pounds on a bench press. How many times can you rep it out? And these guys are just, some of the linemen especially, are just handling it like it's weight, like it's a warm-up weight. It's insane. Every year, though, there's that one player that everyone just marvels at. Last year, it might have been Anthony Richardson, who got drafted by the Indianapolis Colts. Do you have a player in mind for this year's combine that could be the combine superstar, as I call it, the workout warrior?
It's interesting. You mentioned Richardson. I remember watching him last year, and they did that one drill, which is, or it's a big time combine drill now, because you so infrequently see this happen in a game, but they do this drill where the quarterback drops back and then he's got to roll away from pressure and he'll be running to his left, and then he's got to throw across his body deep down the field. And Richardson threw the ball 65 yards across his body, rolling to his left for a perfect strike. And I've read people say, like, that was the moment. That throw was worth millions of dollars to Anthony Richardson. That was the moment where his draft stock just started soaring. So the guy that I'll be interested in is Tavondre Sweat, the big defensive tackle out of the University of Texas, who currently is being projected as maybe like a late first, early second round pick. He's the Outland trophy winner as the best lineman in college football. He's 6'4" and 360 pounds. And the last time he was clocked in the 40, he ran it in 5.04 seconds. Jeez. If he goes sub 5 seconds at that size, and he demonstrates that he's in great shape, he'll be really interesting to watch, because the biggest criticism of him is his conditioning. That they say, man, this is a dude who's got everything you could possibly want in an old school one tech, a defensive tackle that plugs the A gap, like an old school Casey Hampton guy. But one, that position's being phased out of the game a little bit. Those guys are first and second down guys now. And two, is his conditioning where it needs to be? If you wanted him to be a three down guy, could he do it? If he comes in great shape and runs sub five, and shows off, maybe a little bit of a slim down physique, I think he's a guy whose stock could skyrocket.
I don't have anyone. I told you this as we talked topics before our show went live. I don't really follow the college prospects too much until the combine. Now is when I start to kind of narrow the focus, and you get to learn some of these players and things like that. But the one thing that I never understood in the quarterbacks, like, everyone is in love with the quarterbacks. I'm sorry. I don't find it. You mentioned the Richardson throw going across his body. Okay, a strike. He's throwing to someone that has no defender on them. There's no real pressure. And I remember the 2022 draft. Clearly the Steelers selected Kenny Pickett, but it was Malik Willis. and he's throwing the ball and everyone's just, oh yeah, what a throw. It's like, there's no one pressuring him. There's no defender on the receiver running the route. Like, what are we surprised about here? They shouldn't be at the combine if they can't complete these throws, in my opinion. So I do take it with a grain of salt, but I want to ask you one more question before we leave the combine. If you were a coach slash scout that's at the combine, how are you handling watching these drills? Let me give you an example. Everyone I've talked to who has any background in scouting, they always say that basically what this is the cherry on top for their film that they've already put on, the tape they've already put out there. So they are like, okay, let's take a look at, let's use Anthony Richardson from last year from Florida as he came to the draft. We've seen a whole season of film, not very accurate, very low completion percentage. But then what are we seeing at the combine, and do we have to go and revisit something? Is that your approach if you were there, or would it be something different?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of confirmation going on. I've been told by NFL scouts and coaches who have been to the combine that the thing that they value the most at the combine is not what happens on the field, but the personal interaction, the opportunity to get down and talk to these guys, the interview, get them on a whiteboard. You know, what do they know? Especially with the quarterbacks, when you really start saying to them about, hey, draw me up your favorite pass concepts. Right? I mean, I got a NFL pass concept on the board behind me, a deep over concept that just about everybody runs off the duo play. And, you know, you might say like, hey, draw me up Dover, deep over, and show me what you'd be doing against quarters coverage here, or et cetera, et cetera. That they really value that stuff because it gives them an opportunity to really judge a guy's football IQ, get a feel for their personality. You know, are they hanging around with an entourage? Are they humble? I think that stuff matters a lot to them, because in most of these instances, these coaches have never talked to these guys on a personal level before. So it's a really high level meet and greet.
Yeah, it's interesting. And it does kind of, this event feels like it kicks off the next league year, even though the league year doesn't officially begin until the 13th of March, with the tampering period starting on the 11th. That's when it's official. This feels like it's when everything kicks off, which brings us to our next topic. You know, this is also the first time that all these front office execs are going to be in a room to get in a building together. So yeah, there were scouts down at the Senior Bowl and at East West Shrine Bowl and all these all-star games and all that stuff. They've been there, but this is the first time that general managers, head coaches are all going to be in the same place. People might pretend that free agency talks don't happen here, but you know that they are talking, you know that they are on the phone or going out to dinner or whatever. So that leads us to this talk about free agent quarterbacks and really intriguing quarterbacks, because some of them aren't free agents. You've got like the Bears deliberating on whether to draft a quarterback or to just stick with Justin Fields. They had the number one overall pick. You have the Commanders and Patriots at 2 and 3. They both need a quarterback. You have people like Russell Wilson. We're assuming he gets released and therefore he would be a free agent. Kirk Cousins posts a video, shockingly, on the Monday of the combine that he's out there throwing. Looks like he's fully recovered from his Achilles tendon rupture. Give me some predictions here, Coach. What do you think might happen to some of these quarterbacks this offseason? Do you see any places, landing spots for any of these quarterbacks?
Yeah, so that'll be probably the most well-documented and intriguing question of the offseason. I don't have any intel that would suggest I know anything, but I do think the Bears are going to move on from Justin Fields. And if they are, they're probably going to draft Caleb Williams. They really seem to be enamored with him. And then that gets us to the question of, then where does Justin Fields wind up? And I would not be shocked. If I had to make a prediction, I would not be shocked at all to see them trade him to Atlanta, because I think that he would fit in really well with their new offense coordinator, Zach Robinson, who's coming over from the Rams. And I think Fields could do very, very well in a McVay-like scheme with all the pocket movement and the wide zone stuff and the bootleg off of that and some of the design runs that they can scheme up. It feels like marrying Justin Fields with Bijan Robinson and some of Kyle Pitts and some of the skill guys that they have there, and then putting him in a Sean McVay-type scheme makes a lot of sense. That's a deal. If the Bears want to move on from him, I think that's a good partner for them.
What do you think? Just, and you don't have any intel or anything like that, like you just said. What do you think it would take to get Justin Fields, draft capital wise?
It feels like at least a second. And then and maybe a little bit, you know, you can work that deal however you want, a second this year, a fourth next year with it, something along those lines. Maybe if you want more, then Atlanta kicks back a player, who knows. But I think the cornerstone's got to be at least a second round pick.
Yeah, and I think that's too rich for some team's blood, like the Steelers. I don't think the Steelers could see themselves parting with a second round draft pick for Justin Fields, even though a lot of the fan base would love it. I don't think they would. I'm really curious about Kirk Cousins and Russell Wilson. And the reason being is that Russell Wilson technically is not a free agent at the moment of this being recorded. He's going to be released. He's going to say to the Denver Broncos, screw you. You owe me every penny of that contract we signed. So he could go for pretty cheap with all that in mind. But where does he go? Where does he go where he thinks that he has a best chance of playing and being in a position to succeed? He's at the end of his career. Kirk Cousins is coming off of an Achilles. He was throwing footballs on a tennis court. I'm sorry, that doesn't mean that you're fully ready to go. And there's people saying he wants almost upwards of $40 to $50 million a year. I mean, that's insane to me. But we know one thing about the National Football League. There is a team that will pay him the money. I have to think the Raiders are going to be in on some of these guys. I don't know about Russell Wilson. That's interdivision stuff. But then again, he's a free agent. Kirk Cousins, I don't know if he would be the cost prohibitive aspect of the Raiders organization. It'll be really interesting. Do you see any good fits like New England, as you mentioned, the Washington Commanders? Do you see any of these players fitting in particular with one franchise or one team?
I think the Raiders would make sense for Cousins because you've got Aiden O'Connell, who had, you know, did some decent things as a rookie, but clearly could use some time to develop. Cousins probably can give you a year or two out there. I don't think Russell Wilson obviously goes to the Raiders for the reasons you said. I think Wilson's a little trickier because one, there's now a stigmatism attached to Russell Wilson that he's a diva. I don't know if that's true or not, but that seems to be the word on the street. And then if you bring in Wilson, are you bringing in all of that, all the issues that come with him? The attractive thing about Wilson, of course, is his salary. Does he go to Pittsburgh, Jeff? Do the Steelers bring in a Russell Wilson if they can't get a deal done with Mason Rudolph?
It was brought up. I did that podcast. We spoke with our source inside the Steelers facility, and he said that if they can't get Mason Rudolph, that Russell Wilson is going to be on their radar. And my question for you, Russell Wilson's 35 years old. He's coming off of a season. He threw for 3,070 yards. He had 26 touchdowns to only 8 interceptions with a 98 passer rating. I didn't realize it was that good. I mean, 3,000 yards isn't phenomenal in today's NFL, but that touchdown interception ratio is fantastic. That's a really good rating. You think Russell Wilson can still play?
He had a great stretch of football there where he brought the Broncos kind of back from the dead for a while before it sort of fell apart again at the end. To what degree does a team like Atlanta, we'll reference them again, to what degree do they feel like they can win right now? I mean, they're in that NFC South, which is not a great division.
Right.
And so maybe if they can't get a deal done with Fields, or maybe they look at a guy like Wilson and say, he can win games for us right now. He can give us the quarterback play that we lacked last year that hamstrung us, because Atlanta was right in it until about week 14, week 15 in that division. And the quarterback play was bad. So maybe they see him as a guy that can get them over the top and help them win a division title.
I mean, the Denver Broncos, that was a dumpster fire last year for so many aspects of the season. Yes, they had that resurrection midway through the year, but then he got benched. I forgot he got benched like the last 2 to 3 weeks of the season. That would definitely hurt his stat line. I didn't realize I think that what you said about him being a diva is now tarnishing his overall play. People are seeing the really bad Subway commercials, and they're seeing these things on Twitter about him. He just seems like maybe it's his wife. He's married to an artist, a musical artist, and he's a different guy. And some people call him phony. I don't know. I'm just asking if the dude can still play. Because if he can still play, and if the Steelers pick him up, and he might see the Steelers as an opportunity, because let's be honest, Kenny Pickett can't stay healthy. There's no guarantee that Kenny Pickett is the guy for the Steelers. So if Mason Rudolph doesn't stay in Pittsburgh, I would think that Russell Wilson would say, hey, that's a very stable organization. I know he likes Mike Tomlin. maybe this is my best chance to actually win some football games. Cause yeah, you could go to a Carolina, but you're going to be behind Bryce Young and that team sucks anyway. So
right.
Would you be okay with him going to Steelers?
I like Russell Wilson, the player. I like him a lot. I've always liked him. I like him in Arthur Smith's offense because of the mobility and the accuracy. He's always been a really accurate passer. I wish I had a better feel for all, you know, like, yeah. Is Russell Wilson a coachable guy? If there's anybody right. that could really, you know, I don't want to say repair his image, it's Mike Tomlin. I mean, I thought you and I talked about this months ago. I thought the marriage of Russell Wilson and Sean Payton was horrendous from the get-go. I just figured that's never going to work. Right. Those are two personalities that were bound to clash. I think that Russell Wilson and Mike Tomlin would see more of a partnership. So, but you know, Russell Wilson comes on board, man. I mean, what's that say about your faith in Kenny Pickett? I mean, Russell Wilson's probably not coming on board to be the happy-go-lucky number two. He's not going to be a Charlie Batch. Hey, man, I'm happy to fill in when I can. He's a competitive dude, man. That's not his thing. So what would that say about Kenny Pickett? That's another issue.
It would say that if you suck it up, we have someone who's capable behind you. That's what it would say, in my opinion. So we'll see. We could talk about the Steelers for an hour. We're not going to do that. Let's move to the next topic. The fifth-year option decision is coming up. Everyone that follows the NFL should know that a first-round draft pick, clubs have a fifth-year financial option, and it has to be made after their third year is completed. That deadline is May 2nd. Some of the players that teams will be making a fifth-year decision on, Trevor Lawrence, Ja'Marr Chase, Penei Sewell, Micah Parsons, the Steelers' Najee Harris was a first-round draft pick. They're all likely to get picked up, meaning the fifth-year option. But if you could only do it for one, who would it be?
This is a good class. Yeah, there's some real high-end players there. The tempting answer, I think, there is Lawrence because he's the quote-unquote franchise quarterback. But I'm going to say Penei Sewell. He's the guy I would pick up simply because to find that anchor of your line, I think it's very tricky. It's hard to find a cornerstone quarterback as well. I'm just not 100% sold Lawrence is that guy. I mean, Lawrence has had some great runs in his early career so far, but he's also had some times where he just hasn't looked like a franchise quarterback. He's been inconsistent. And I think Doug Peterson's system is really quarterback friendly. So if you're not succeeding, I'm not saying he's not succeeding, but if you're not flourishing in that system, then it's, I think, going to be hard for you to flourish elsewhere. Whereas Penei Sewell, man, that guy is a force of nature. I mean, and you look at what like Detroit's identity is, and it's so perfectly suited to have a guy like him be the cornerstone of your line. I mean, I'm a big believer that you build from the inside out. And so if you can give me that cornerstone lineman who's going to be there for another 8 or 10 years playing at an all-pro level, I'll take him.
It's a very good pick. I'm actually going to go. I'm going to surprise you. Like you said, I think a lot of people would say you're going to go the quarterback. I'm going to go with Ja'Marr Chase because Ja'Marr Chase is the stud of all studs in terms of a wide receiver. And if you get him for a fifth year, you want to lock him up, but longer than that. Like you use this as kind of like a, hey, let's pick up the fifth year option and then let's continue to negotiate as we try to get a long-term deal done. But I think the one thing you realize with some of these skill position players is that what is a contract anymore? You know, we talked about it with a lot of players, especially, oh my gosh, the defensive lineman for the Chiefs you thought should be the MVP.
Chris Jones.
Chris Jones. He held out like the first 5 weeks of the season. He's under contract. So at that point, you got to get the most out of your skill players that you can. Ja'Marr Chase's don't come around all the time. I know that the Bengals franchise tagged T. Higgins recently, and so he'll be back, Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, for one more year for sure. Actually, T. Higgins will probably be gone by then. But still, I would take Ja'Marr Chase. I don't think there's a wrong answer, though. I really don't. Like Micah Parsons is a phenomenal player. Trevor Lawrence is going to be a quarterback. He'll get his option picked up. Najee Harris will probably get his option picked up with the Steelers. So yeah. I don't think there's a bad decision here.
Yeah, man, there's some darn good players here. Two thoughts on what you said. One, you picked a Bengal. So yeah, kudos to you for being the bigger man there, you know.
I feel filthy.
and two, I have to, you know, you sometimes have a personal bias against the Bengals. I have a personal bias against wide receivers. I can't stand wide receivers. I don't like to coach them. They're my least favorite position group. So that jaded me as far as Ja'Marr Chase is concerned. But yeah, I think that Cincinnati, the way they're constructed, it would obviously be a great move on their part to lock him up. Whether or not, you know, again, whether or not he's open to coming back. I mean, he seems like with Joe Burrow, his college teammate, that they got a great connection. That would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, Joe Burrow, like he basically bought a house for him when he got drafted so he can live near him and stuff. Like those two guys are tight. So I don't think they're going to be breaking up that marriage anytime soon. Let's go to the last question, the last topic here. It's a non-football question. We're now in the dead period of the sports calendar with no major sporting events of interest for the next month or so, obviously until hockey and basketball get into their playoffs or all March Madness as well. What will you be doing to fill the void? Coach, go ahead.
I know we're a month away from the United Football League. Are you excited for that? That doesn't start till the end of March. No, you're not going to. I will watch it. I'll be honest. I will watch the United Football League because I just am a geek for football, but this is the hardest month for me, man. March. I mean, I'm a teacher. There's no days off. The weather stinks in my part of the United States in March. It's nice in some places, but not on a barrier island by the Atlantic Ocean where it's 45 and windy. Oh. Thankfully, you know, I mean, with my coaching, I'll be involved with lots of different sports and our team and all that. But yeah, I look at the structure of the American sports calendar. And I think, man, every month just about has its marquee thing, a thing that can really draw you in. You know, it's a little bit slow in July and August, but people don't care as much because it's summer. I feel as though we need to build for, you know, a better event for March, because March Madness, they call it that, but it really doesn't kick until the end of the month.
Yeah.
You know, so where can they land a marquee event in March?
Well, you know, to each their own. Like for me, this is the start of golf season. So like I am a big golfer. Obviously I've been to a golf podcast. I golf regularly. I'm a single digit handicap. I love to play. My kids play. So when March rolls around is when, at least in the mid-Atlantic where I live, the weather really starts to turn and you can get out to the golf course. The time changes. So you have more daylight. You can go play 9 after work or something. I find this awesome. And it's always a lead up to the best event of the year really for me is the Masters. I love the Masters. So the golf season will get me through. You got the Players Championship at the end of March. That's always fun down at the TPC Sawgrass with the Island Green number 17. That leads up to the Masters a couple weeks later in Augusta. And then all is right with the world. That's for me, it's golf. I swear that's all it is. And it's always been that way for me. My dad's a big golfer. My family comes. We're all big golfers, a golfing family. So I don't get too much into like NCAA basketball or anything that I'll watch, but no, I like watching golf. Like golf gets me through every weekend.
Yeah. You and Pez got to get out together. You know, I mean,
he's been talking trash. He's going to get waxed next time I see.
If you're a single digit handicap, you will wax Pez. You know, so.
Hey, he wants to bet. Like he's all about Pez's picks. So let's pick some golf holes. Yeah. I don't know how good he is. So we'll see. We'll see.
He's not that.
Sorry, let's finish with a fun player profile. Cam Newton, he held a 7-on-7 camp. I did see this video where did he get jumped or was he trying to break it up? Like I saw this and you can just see his crazy hat all over the place. And I'm what is going on? So he got jumped this tournament?
So I read a little bit about it today. Yeah, it looks like there was his team won the tournament and it looks like there was a dispute between his team and another team and I don't know if these were parents or just fans of the other team, but about six different guys at one point and we're all in on this, you know, like this jumping of Cam Newton. And, you know, on a serious note, you're obviously very glad it didn't escalate into something terrible. On a less than serious note, if you saw the Twitter video, it looked like something staged by the WWE, you know, where like you put, you know, like the Undertaker in the middle of the ring and then all these like, you know, hangers on come rushing in and try to jump him and he just discards them all one by one. I mean, it's incredible. People forget NFL football players, man. They're the real deal. Like Cam Newton is 6'6" and he made his living, you know, playing up against 300-pound dudes for years and years and years. Cam Newton was an absolute wrecking ball in college where he used to just run through defenses in that offense at Auburn. the notion that, like, yeah, man, me and you, we're going to take down Cam Newton. That is a naive fool's errand. And that video was, again, glad it didn't turn into something worse, but quite entertaining watching him just swat them away like I'm swatting away 10-year-olds.
Well, have you ever heard about the FAFO scale? I mean, that's exactly what it is for these people that think they can just keyboard warrior their way to talking about these professional athletes. It's the F around it and F out, find out scale. Yeah. So UK, you're going to step up to Cam Newton. You're going to F around. You're going to find out. And they did. And so I know Cam Newton, he doesn't hold back in terms of running his mouth. So I'm sure there were some words between everything, and there was a lead up. And it probably was a lot like wrestling, and it probably was not entertaining. I hope no one got hurt, but it probably was pretty entertaining for those over there.
And his hat never came off. That was the best part.
His hair was like sticking through. I don't know how it would come off. And I don't know. Anyways, that was a good player profile. What's coming up on the call sheet this week, Coach?
Yeah, call sheet this week. It's episode 46. So we're doing a little bit of a different approach. We usually profile a player who wore that jersey number. But this year we're gonna look at the Chicago Bears' famous 46 defense back from the 1985 Bears, when they were legendary defense, the 46 defense. And then we're gonna look at what are some of the hot and trendy schemes in football these days? What are the schemes that have a chance to be talked about someday, like the Bears 46 defense is talked about? And then we'll do some combine talk as well.
Yeah, that sounds like fun. I can't think of a 46 that's like that number. Like, I know you always do with your call sheet the first half. You're like, number 46, the great number 46. I'm drawing a blank. Like, even in Steelers history, I'm drawing a blank. Now, 47, you better have that one already earmarked.
I know that one. I know exactly. That one. It changed the rules because of that guy.
Exactly. That better be number 47. Yeah. All right, Coach. Hey, good stuff. Tell everyone where they can find you on social media.
On Twitter at KT Smith FFSN, over on our FFSN and Steel Curtain Network YouTube channels, doing a lot of video breakdowns now of draft prospects.
Absolutely. You can find me on Twitter at Jay Hartman, HARTMAN _PIT. All of our Steelers content at the Steel Curtain Network, our podcast, our YouTube, we're everywhere. Make sure you like this video. Give us a 5-star review if you're listening on the audio side. We do appreciate it. Coach, until next week, take it easy.
Yes, sir.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.